The reason, the topic of the shiur is getting you after the meal is over, end of the meal, afterwards. I think most people, Baruch Hashem, at this point in time are fairly familiar with what to do, to how to get make do the meal properly, how to cook, the cooking issues, the issues would you get you up to that point. From the point afterwards, I think there's some areas which are gray. People are not so familiar with them. So we wanted to do a share on that topic. There's a lot to cover, and I'm going to try and do it as clearly as possible, which might mean that we will not be able to cover everything in one share. So if we do that, we'll have to reschedule a second share to finish off the rest of the points. And we will also talk about issues of if there's spills, etc., those type of things. I want to try and get through that tonight. The starting point we're going to start with, before we get to the kitchen and you're washing the dishes, is you got to get things off of the table. So getting things off of the table, that we'll talk about first. You have on your plates, so you have food stuff, you have leftover food stuff, which is on the plates. What are the issues with that? What issues do you have with that? So the Gemara says, if I start out with something which starts out being edible, and by the time I finish eating it, I have leftover bones, which are not edible anymore. I have eggshells, I have shells, nutshells, which are not edible. So these become muksa. If I take them and to the point where they're not edible, so they become muksa. So now that we have a problem, we have on our table, the person that had a hard-boiled egg, he cracked the shell of the hard-boiled egg on the table for whatever reason. And notice I said he. Okay, right. So, and now you have the eggshell sitting on the table. So these eggshells are muksa. So how do we get them off of the table? So that's the question which we're going to try to address, is how do we address getting these items which are muksa off of the table? So first, let's start with that. That's the broad. So let's go to some of the possibilities. Number one. So, bones, which is maybe the most common scenario you have, you're not necessarily having eggshells on your table, but you're having bones on your table, is the most common scenario. Bones, as long as there are dogs to give bones to, in the neighborhood there are dogs, and you can feed, these are bones which you give to a dog, they're not considered muksa. Even though you do not own a dog, or an animal which would eat this thing, but since there are such animals who do that, and they are common in this neighborhood, therefore they're not considered muksa. So if you have chicken bones left over, you're not going to be worried about the chicken bones. You have meat bones left over, if those are not considered, those are not going to be problem of muksa, you can give them to a dog. If it would be common, I don't know whether it is, or that there's some type of shells which are eaten by dogs or are birds in the neighborhood, etc. So those would be also not a problem of muksa. Chazal came along and said that a third example of something which is considered a leftover, which is considered a muksa, is a fascinating example. Chazal said bread less than a kazayas. Crumbs of bread become muksa. Bread crumbs become muksa. But again, if I have animals which I can feed them to, so even though people do not eat them anymore, they're muksa because people will not use them anymore, they're not considered muksa because there are animals to... I think you can take a chair from the back room. Okay, so if we have them, we have these options. So Baruch Hashem, we've solved that problem. They're not muksa. They're not muksa. You can take them off regularly and dispose of them as you normally do. Let's say we don't in this neighborhood there are dogs which are not common. There's dogs in other neighborhoods, but in our neighborhood, it's not common to have dogs.
Now, just clarify, they're not mux as far as taking them off the table and putting them in your garbage, but they're mux in terms of a kid playing with them at the table while you're having a discussion.
No, they're not mux. They're not mux. Okay. As long as there's still some meat on the chicken bone, as long as there's still something which there's a little bit of the nut inside the shell, they're not mux. If you have a bone which has marrow inside of it, so that bone has marrow inside of it, so even though you're not planning to eat it, but there is something which is edible there, which you can break open and eat it, so it's not considered muksa. Now I will point out, I do want to point out, that Yom Tov has a different rules when it comes to this. Yom Tov, if I have bones which started at the beginning of Yom Tov, that this is part of this food item which is we use by for a human, and now it's going to be used for an animal, it becomes muksa. And this is one of the examples where Yom Tov is more stringent than Shabbos. That even though on Shabbos it would not be considered muksa, on Yom Tov it would still be considered muksa. There's still meat on it. But if you were relying on the fact that it's edible to animals, on Yom Tov that's going to be muksa, we would have to find some other solutions how to take this off the table. So now we've addressed certain things are not a problem of muksa because etc. But now we have nutshells. No dogs are eating these nutshells. Nice hard walnut shells or Brazil nutshells, right? And that's it. Or I have eggshells. Eggshells are clearly muksa. So what are you allowed to do? So we'll go through a series of few different options of what you're allowed to do. Not all of them are going to work for you, obviously, in all scenarios. But I want to point out what is permitted. What?
You take the eggshell before Shabbos.
That's one solution. Okay. Right. Okay. So now you're allowed to shake off from the table onto the floor. So if I have some little crumbs, remember crumbs are muksa. Is that crumbs are left? There's no animals around. Crumbs are muksa. So I want to shake off the few crumbs onto the floor. I'm allowed to do that. We'll talk about how to get them off the floor next. We'll get to that. Okay? We will get to that.
Wait, is this on Shabbos or Yom Tov then?
Shabbos and Yom Tov are the same in regards to this. The only difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is that Shabbos, animals being available, solves anything which is edible for an animal solves the problem. And Yom Tov does not solve the problem. So Yom Tov, you're always going to have this problem. And in Shabbos, it depends whether there's animals around.
But why can't animals will eat breadcrumbs, or birds will eat breadcrumbs?
Right. Agreed. If you have animals, you can feed it to a crab. Birds, which do not belong to any person, don't help. Has to be people. Right. If people in the neighborhood keep birds as birds, then it would work. But if nobody in the neighborhood keeps birds, hefker birds don't count.
How do you know, how many dogs? You're putting them in the trash. No dog's going to come.
No. The fact that it is theoretically usable by a dog solves the problem.
So
I'm not giving it to any dogs. I never see a dog. I run away from dogs. I don't know dogs. But the fact that dogs exist and people own dogs in the neighborhood, that solves the problem. Right. Okay. So the first solution you have is that you could shake it off. Okay. That will get you on the floor, which you have to deal with how to do it off the floor. We'll get to that. The second solution, the Mishnah Berurah comes along and says, and this is going to be much more of a helpful solution, is that you cannot pick them up directly and move them off the table, but you could take a knife and you could scrape them off of the table. If you need the spot, if you're planning to use the spot again for something else, I want to serve dessert right now and this is in the way, I can move it. If I have no need, I just like to make, I want it to look clean, that's not going to be mutter. If I need to use the spot where it is, I'm allowed to take a knife and scrape off these items off of the table. I could do that again to the floor would be one option. Well, again, we'll deal with how to get off the floor. Or the next heter is that I'm allowed to carry them to the garbage together with something which is not muksa. So the plate doesn't count, but I can put a plate underneath with a knife on it. Scrape it onto the plate. Now I have the plate with the knife. I can carry it to the garbage, hold on to the knife, and discard these items. So the most common way, the best way to get your muksa items off of the table to the garbage, the best way to get them to the garbage is to carry them to the garbage together with something which is permitted. So you will scrape it off the table with this knife. If you need that spot, you can shake it off onto the plates. Plate has a knife with it. The plate has some bread with it. The plate has something which is mutter on it. And then I can carry the plate with this, with the muksa, with the bread, with the muksa, with the knife, to the garbage, and shake off the garbage, shake off the muksa into the garbage at that point in time. Okay.
Can you use a napkin? Or is that the only utensil you can use? Can you use a napkin and put into a plate or not?
Napkin, I think, it has to be something more kosher than just a disposable napkin. You'd have a cloth napkin, yes.
Right.
Right.
What about those plastic tablecloth covers? You just
We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll try and get to that. Okay.
What about those little things that for Pesach that you have, those little rollers that I use all year long? Could you use that? Because it picks
up
the crumbs.
You use it on the table?
Yeah. It's like a little roller.
You roll it and you collect the crumbs.
See, if crumbs are not muksa, so it's fine. If crumbs are muksa, and Yom Tov, crumbs are muksa. So you couldn't, you're carrying the crumbs directly. That would be a problem. So on Shabbos, I think you're okay, but in Yom Tov, it would
okay.
Yes?
Just trying to clarify, I think we did it already, but this situation, we're going through a lot of scenarios having to do with crumbs and things that could be muksa. These issues that we're going through are only an issue in like B'nai Brak and Brooklyn, like places where we're not going to find animals. Like
or on Yom Tov.
Or on Yom Tov, okay.
Yom Tov, it's very negate to all of us.
And the reason that you have to put the utensil on the plate is because, let's say, a plate or a napkin are going to become muksa once the...
No, you're not allowed to carry muksa. You're not allowed to transport muksa on a plate either. But when you put the other thing on the plate, you said that we're using the plate to transport both items. Chazal made a kula to allow us to have a nice clean place. It's a kula. They made a special kula. We're going to look at it as if the main thing you're carrying is the heter item, not the isser item. So that was a special kula Chazal made because we understand we want to have a nice clean table for Shabbos. So they, even though it's muksa, they gave us a solution how to carry it off. Normally you couldn't move muksa like that. Right? But since, because my main goal is to move the muksa, not the non-muksa. I would normally have to shake off the muksa. But over here, for the purpose of cleaning the table, Chazal made a kula.
If you have animals, does that count as a reason to move it also?
What?
If you have animals, does that count as a reason to move it? Like, let's say an animal's
going to
come and jump on the table if there are food or crumbs or anything like that?
Would that be considered that you need that place? Again, this heter of getting them on the plate and carrying them away, you don't need the place. The question is, how do you get it off the table? So you could shake it off the table. I don't need an animal for that. To be used the sakin to say, because I need that mokum. I'm not sure. Okay. Now, if there's a large amount there, to the point where a person finds it's disgusting, revolting, they find it uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. Stress the word very. Not just that, I don't like it. It really bothers you. You're allowed to take it off and take it off directly. We don't need to do any of these heterim. You can pick it up directly and take it to the garbage. You don't need. So a person has, so eggshells maybe is not going to bother you, but you know, you have chicken bones and stuff like that. It's like, right, all this stuff sitting here, you can pick it up and take it directly to the garbage. Now, the reason why it bothers you is because you have so much of it. So, if I take away half of it in the first shot, and now it doesn't bother me so much, I can't take away the second half. Because the heter is because I find it uncomfortable and disgusting. So, if it's all, if I, you know, like six chicken bones sitting there, but one I can live with, but six I can't, so I take five in one shot, I can't come back for the sixth one. Now it's no longer in that situation. So, if I want to use this heter, I have to take it all in one shot.
Why is it the large amount that makes it disgusting?
Depends on the person. It depends on the person.
So if you consider a smaller amount disgusting, then the person could remove a smaller amount?
Depends on the person. Right. That says something which is subjective. But again, disgusting. I mean, I find that this, and you really find it revolting. You know? Okay. I have a disposable tablecloth. I have a plastic disposable tablecloth, and I want to just wrap up the tablecloth and take it to the garbage and throw it out. So that's a great solution, right? Well, depends. If there are non-muksa items in the tablecloth, there's some non-muksa things. I would have some plastic forks, etc., which are still usable. If you really could wash them, they're still usable. They're not considered muksa. Okay? So I want to carry those. I just roll up the whole thing so there's muksa in there. There's non-muksa in there. I can take the muksa and the non-muksa together to the garbage can. And that's the same head that we have with the plate. I'm carrying it together with the muksa and the non-muksa. Leftover, if you have plastic cutlery, which has been used, but it can be washed, it's not considered muksa. Even though you're throwing it out, it's not considered muksa. So, if you're this very big, very makpid on ecology, and you take all of the plastic cutlery off and you wash them, you leave the doctor, all of the things that you have to be thrown out, so then you have a problem, you can't carry it. But if you leave something in there, so the shame, the ecologist hopefully would moichel you that you want to be able to clean up your table and you can throw it out like that. Okay. Now this halacha of that, if it really bothers you, so you're allowed to take it away, etc. Excuse me. The more refers to that. The more refers to this heter. This heter was they lived in a time when they had to do their bodily functions in the house, etc. They didn't have a special room for it. So Chazal said you had to be able to remove that item from the house to get rid of it. Because even though it's muksa, they're matir. So that goes under that umbrella. But the more says we try not to make that situation the chachila. So don't go to Karkhila and put chicken bones and on the table to create this problem. Well, who put chicken bones on the table to create that problem? Well, maybe we do. Maybe say that if I have a little bit on each plate, it doesn't really bother me, but I make one big plate full of all the stuff together, it bothers me. So am I allowed to go to Karkhila and gather all of the chicken bones together on one big plate and make this big pile of chicken bones, and now it bothers me, now I can take it away? Well, not necessarily, because I'm not supposed to do that. Chachila. So there's this famous question that they ask you when it comes to shidduchim: do you scrape at a table or not scrape at a table? Right. So here's a halachic issue over here when it comes to that. Right. So, or alternatively, you tell me even one chicken bone bothers me, so I'm allowed to remove it. So fine, so remove it, but don't do two steps. Don't bring it on to one big plate and then remove it if it bothers you. Even one bothers you, so fine, to take it to the garbage and throw it out, because that bothers you. No problem. But what's your heter to go and first put it into another plate, which you're moving muksa not for the purpose of getting rid of it, just make it more easy to transport, and then take it away. So this issue of standing by the table and taking all of the leftovers onto one plate and taking it to the kitchen is not necessarily going to be such a great idea. Again, if the chicken bones aren't muksa because there's meat left on them, it's not a problem anyway. If these are type of bones which you can feed to dogs, etc., so it's not a problem. On Yom Tov, you would have that issue. So even on Shabbos, you say you'd be okay to scrape by the table, by Yom Tov, it's much more problematic to do that because of this issue. Similarly, if a person would have an option, let's say he's sitting. They're not sitting. I keep saying he because men would do this type of thing, right? It's not the suit anymore. It's Shabbos afternoon, and the person's sitting in the kitchen, right near the garbage can, breaking open nuts, right? Or he decides to pull out an egg from the and crack it open. So don't put the eggshell on the table with a filo. The garbage can's right behind you. So if you have an option of throwing it out as you do it, instead of piling it up and then say, oh, it's disgusting, and then taking it away, it'd be better as you do it to do it over the garbage can and not have to have this problem. Person eats watermelon. Right? So they remove the pits. So you have this pile of watermelon pits. It's not very pleasant. Right? So if you have an option of putting them directly into the garbage can, you don't have a heter putting them on your pile right in front of you, making a pile of them. Maybe sunflower seeds, the garinim, maybe the shells are not so meas, but you know, but yes.
You're allowed to leave like extra piece, like on any of these, whether it be a plate or the tablecloth, like leave an extra piece of challah that's not considered muksa. It's a full piece of challah so that you can wrap it up and then there's no problem. I mean, like, am I purposefully allowed to leave like the extra challah or whatever so I can wrap it up?
You could, just as there's a lacha when you have a kazayas of challah, you should
wrap it.
Right.
Like, there's your solution, right?
Well, you would wrap it up separately from the rest of the tablecloth. You shouldn't throw it out with all the other servants together. Wrap it in a napkin. Yeah, but you could do that.
But I could wrap it in a napkin and then wrap it all together, and then that's my problem.
Correct. Okay. That would solve the problem. Okay. Now, so can I take the garbage can? So, you know, we're saying, so I'm allowed to tilt it off directly onto the floor. So let me bring the garbage can to the table and solve the problem that way. You know, if I want to do that, would that be something which is acceptable? So the garbage cans have a fascinating issue, because garbage cans, are made to hold muksa. So you bring the garbage can. As if it's an empty garbage can, it's the beginning of Shabbos, there's nothing in it, so great. The garbage can isn't muksa. But if right now I have I have garbage in it already, it's already Shabbos day, and there's already garbage there from the night before, so there's muksa items in the garbage. So what's my hetzer to move the garbage can with its muksa items to the table? Better question is, what's my hetzer to take the garbage out? Okay, so I have my garbage bag and it's full of muksa. I want to take it outside to my garbage cans outside. Am I allowed to do that? What's that to do that? So again, so if there's a graf shalei situation, it smells very bad and it's overflowing and it's disgusting. So I'm allowed to take it out of the house. So I'm allowed to. And then some people actually raise the question, so what's my hetzer to put it first in the garbage can, to take it straight out of the house to the outside garbage can right away instead of creating that problem? That is a good question. As far as I know, the person saying you're allowed to put it in the regular garbage can, and then when it gets overflowing, you'll take it outside. It's smelling or it's overflowing, etc. That would be if you have that. But let's say it's not like that. You know, it doesn't smell so terrible. So is there any hetzer? So there is a hetzer, going back to what we said with the cutlery, if nowadays in the world of disposables, so our garbage is not, much of our garbage is not really muksa. The plastic tablecloth is not muksa. The plastic cutlery is not muksa. The styrofoam cups aren't muksa. The paper cups aren't muksa. Paper plates aren't muksa. Right? You go through, if the majority of my garbage can isn't muksa, so then my hetzer is, then we can say that the minority of the muksa is considered secondary to the majority, which is there, and I'm allowed to take it out to the garbage. So again, depends on, the more you recycle, the more you put everything into a separate, and you keep your eco, the what you put into the garbage is just real actual foodstuffs, the more you're creating a problem about carrying it out on Shabbos. And then the hetzer would have to be graf shalei when it gets to the point where it's really, really uncomfortable. Okay, so now we've got our crumbs on the floor, either because the children put them there, or because we tilted them off of the table onto the floor. So what am I allowed to do in regards to cleaning up the floor? What am I allowed to do when it comes to the floor?
That's a question about the other point before you switch.
Yeah.
The garbage. So how come the hetzer of the animal would eat it doesn't apply to that?
It theoretically does. Again, it theoretically does, but the yomtov is not going to help you. You know, any hetzer you have for animals, Baruch Hashem, it's certainly have animals. And, you know, you go to some other. It's not necessarily. In Cleveland, very few from Jews have dogs either. You need somebody that you would have a mitzvah. You would have a possibility of sharing with them to feed, even though you're not going to do that. But you would have theoretically. So it'd be if that's considered someone which is
the person saying. What about a non-Jewish neighbor?
If you do that, that'd be fine. Right.
But what about in the tower if you're not allowed to have dogs? Does that make a difference?
The towers, I don't know, but cats eat different things. I have no knowledge of what animals eat when it comes to that. What, you know, I imagine there's certain type of chicken bones you can't feed to them because they're probably not safe for them. I don't know, it wouldn't be safe to feed them, it might hurt them. I don't know what they can eat, what they can't eat, I don't know. But theoretically, would we look at the Warwick as a separate unit? It's possible. I mean, that's what the Warwick people hold, I mean, in many ways. it's an interesting question. I would say probably not. I'd say probably it's not considered separate. So Chazal came along and said they used to have earthen floors. The floor was dirt. And sweeping was a problem because the floor would become uneven. And as you sweep, you'd move the dirt around, you'd fill up holes, and you'd actually be flattening out your floor and making it more functional. So Chazal came along and said, we have a problem. You can't sweep on Shabbos because you're going to smooth out the floor, and that's a problem of fixing up the floor. However, they said in a case where the majority of the city, and they said, even if your floor is not an earthen floor, your floor is a stone floor, but since there are floors in the town which are earthen, are dirt, and if we allow you to sweep on this floor, you might come to sleep on that floor. They said you can't sweep even on a floor which is a wooden floor or a stone floor. You cannot sweep because you might come to sleep on a dirt floor. However, if the majority of the homes in the city have regular floors, which we do nowadays, Baruch Hashem, so then you're allowed to sweep the floor. You're moving muksa. When you sweep the floor, you're moving these crumbs which are on the floor, but they're on the floor. They're not being used for anything. Maybe at this point in time, they're clearly muksa, even for the dog. You're not giving it for the dog anymore, once it's on the floor, possibly. So, and for sure, on Yom Tov, it's a problem. So, how are you allowed to sweep? Why are you allowed to sweep the floor? So, again, it's a kula chazal recognize the need to keep the home clean for Shabbos. So, they permitted it to do it. If you're not picking it up with your hands, you're using a broom. Normally, moving muksa, there are some cases where moving muksa, when it's done indirectly as opposed to directly, that it's more permitted. So they're going to allow, over here, the idea of using a broom, doing it indirectly, doing it, moving it with the broom, that is going to permit it to clean it up. It's called tiltum min hatzad, l'tzarech davar hamutar. Or, we'll get to the dustpan in a second. Okay. What? Not dustpan. Okay. Or there's a heter of what we said before. It gets to the point where it's disgusting. It's you have all this. I'm walking on top of all of this junk on my floor. It's disgusting to the point I really want to get it out. So then you'd be allowed to pick it up by hands. You're allowed to move muksa directly once you get to that point. So you're allowed to use a broom. Now, what about a dustpan? Yes.
I was just thinking about does that mean that on Shabbos, I don't think it's sweep yourself out because the majority of people have an earthen floor sukkah?
No. If the place you put your sukkah was a place which is like clearly an extension of the home, person has a back porch or something of that sort, so that's clearly an extension of the home, it has the same heter as the home. But if you put it somewhere else, let's say on a person's driveway, which is not directly connected to the home, yes, you would have a problem. You would have a problem with it.
You're talking about muksa. Is a piece of challah that fell on the floor is muksa?
Less than a kazayas.
Uh-huh.
Once it's smaller than a kazayas. Yeah.
Sorry. There was a question before about using the rollers on the table.
Yeah.
So wouldn't that be parallel to a broom?
Using a roller on the table.
It's a kli, you're not moving it with your hands. You roll it across the table, it collects the crumbs, just like
it's a box with a circular broom inside, and as you roll it, the broom picks up the crumbs and puts them inside the box so they shouldn't come out, and then you clean the table.
It's a good point. It's a good point. Okay.
Is that a yes?
What? Is that a yes? You know, I didn't say that. At first glance, the answer is yes. I want to think. I actually see a difference, but I need to think about it. But I would assume yes.
The difference is you're carrying it. That's your reason.
Right. So now the question is get to the dustpan.
Right. Are you allowed to make it so that it's more disgusting? The difference between whether or not my floor is intolerable or tolerable in general is whether you have shoes on. So, am I allowed to take my shoes off and be like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely disgusting, and then sweep? Or, I have to first... my question is, if I'm walking on the floor and it's disgusting, do I have to put on my shoes so that I don't notice it? Or can I be like...
So, you have two different questions that you asked. The first question was, if I have my shoes
so
on, can I take them off? Second question is, if I have them off, do I have to put them on?
Either way.
It's two different questions.
Either way.
If your shoes are off, you do not have to put them on.
Okay.
If your shoes are on, if your shoes are on, you should not take them off.
Okay.
Okay. So now the question is, so this heter of tiltum min hatzad, which you say that we're doing an act of sweeping, is the main point the fact that you're using something else? The main point that what you're doing is not a direct act of moving it, it's sweeping it. And the difference, of course, would be the dustpan. The dustpan is you're not sweeping, you're using this to carry the item. You're in the care of the item. So the dustpan, they say, you go back to, which is why the dustpan, you go back to the rule, you should have something in there which is not muksa. So the sweeping is sweeping. When you want to use a dustpan, you drop a plastic fork or plastic knife in there. So you're carrying the dustpan. So again, If the items which are there are not really muksa, but in a case where they really are muksa, if you carry something else with it, that's like the plate. So that's like carrying the plate. So I'm sure the broom thing, I'm not sure how that works. Yeah.
Can't you sweep it in a pile? Are you allowed to take a napkin and pick it up and throw it in the trash or not?
If it gets to the point where you find it really disgusting to leave it there, yes. If not, it's not, not. Now, when you use brooms, so they grapple with the issue. If you're going to be, it should be done in such a way that you're not going to be breaking the bristles. Now, we usually have synthetic brooms nowadays, but anybody who's still one of these naturalists using the good old straw brooms, which break easily, you should not do it in a way that's going to break the straws. So that's a remora in Siman Shin Lamed Zayin. Okay. Now we're familiar with the halacha of you can't mop on Shabbos. So if a person wanted to say, okay, I have a dirty floor, I want to mop, so that's not an option. Now what about not mopping? I just want to put some water down. So, you know, I want to put some water down. This is something that's very sticky, etc. I want to pour some water on the floor. I'm not going to mop it. I'm just going to put the water down, and I want to do that. So going back to this problem which Chazal were grappling with, they said, okay, we go back to our earth, the dirt floors. So on the dirt floor, they could not use water because that would smooth out the floor, etc. And that would be a malacha deraisa. And they said, even if you don't have a dirt floor, you have a wooden floor or you have a stone floor, we're going to say it's a problem. Over here, they said even if the majority of the floors in the city are stone, even the majority of the floors in the city are wood, you can't use water. You can't put water down because the need for sweeping was a very common need. The need for putting water down was not so common, and therefore they did not permit that. So to do hadacha, to be madichin, to put the water down, they did not permit. However, since the reason why it's a problem, they didn't permit it, is because it wasn't so necessary. In the case where it gets to the point where it's actually necessary, I cannot clean it up without putting some water down. You'd be allowed to put water down. If the majority of the city, our situation is such, the majority of the floors in the city are covered. So a person with a lot of people would be allowed to put some water down to clean up the, and you can't mop it, but you can't squeeze anything. You can put the water down to clean it up. What?
It's just sitting on the floor.
You're just putting water on the floor and you're going to leave it there.
Okay, and we'll get to the next step. Okay. Okay.
What do you do with the water?
Okay. So now, so what can you do with this water which is there? See, if you live in Eretz Yisrael and you have your makal gumi, right, you have your sponge and stick, so you go to the sponge hole with the sponge and stick, and that's mutter on Shabbos, so that's not a problem, right? But we don't live in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have sponge and sticks. I mean, maybe you have a sponge and stick, but, you know, but where are you going to go with it? Right? You know, there's no sponge or hole to put it out. That actually is mutter. So now you have the water on, you can push it with the sponge and stick, and that's not a problem. But that's not a solution for us. So when I'm going to deal with spills and how to deal with spills and cleaning up spills, etc., it'll be the same. Now you're in the same situation. You have water on the floor, like I have water on the table. How are you allowed to clean up a spill? And that. So I want to get the spills as a separate unit. We'll get the, or if we have enough time, we will get the spills. But now you're in the situation as if water is spilled on the floor, or if the water is spilled on the table. What are you allowed to do when water spills? Okay. Let's say it fell onto a carpet. So now I'm not talking about a wood floor. I'm talking about a stone floor. I'm talking about on a carpet. So comes the carpet, things get much more complicated, because we know one of the lametes malachas on Shabbos is the malacha of malabein, of cleaning, of laundering, of bleaching. All these go together. These are the malachas. It's one of the 39 categories of work on Shabbos is that a person can't clean out a garment. The definition of the malacha of laundering is it has to have some level of absorption. So I can wash dishes. It's not called malabein because the food doesn't get absorbed into the dishes. However, when I have a garment, the dust, the dirt, whatever it is, gets absorbed into the garment, and that's the malacha of malabein. a carpet in that sense functions similar to a garment, that the food stuff or whatever it is can get absorbed in, and it can be problematic. So, the halacha says, we're talking about garments, that together with, there are three areas where they spoke about when they spoke about the halacha of cleaning, of laundry. One was the washing process using water, etc. We'll talk about that. That's very applicable to your tablecloths, etc. That's one area where it comes up. The second area, which normally applies more to garments, is if there's dust on a garment. A person gets some dirt on his jacket, a person gets dirt on a piece of item of clothing, are you allowed to rub it off or not? So the halacha is somewhat counterintuitive. The halacha says like this: the more that it bothers you, the more it's osur. The less that it bothers you, I'm not really doing anything. I don't mind. There's nothing there. The more, that's dirt. That's also to do. According to Rashi, that's a malacha deraisa. A person would have transgressed the biblical prohibition. If he gets something on his jacket and rubs like this, he's done an issur deraisa. He's chayav korban kaf. Okay? He's cleaned off that dust which settled into the garment. And therefore, there's a halacha, just as I'm going off, digressing from cleaning. There's a halacha, you're not supposed to put your garment down in a place where it'll get dusty, because we're afraid you might come to dust off your clothing. So a person goes to a simcha, and they ask him, to me it's wearing a gag by a hat. A men's hat is a very common issue. Right? It's something which is dark, it's visible, it's something that you care about. And you put it on the coat rack of this shul, which nobody's dusted there. You can't put the hat there. Because if you're going to put it in a place where it's going to get dusty, there's an issur derabanan, it's prohibited rabbinically to put it there because you might come and dust it off afterwards. And you'll see a young man pick up his hat and start dusting it with his jacket. That's also to do. You can't do that. So now when I get to my carpet, so how do we apply it to the carpet? So now going back to our jacket situation, it says that let's say there was a much more of a common issue. They use their down quilt, etc. They would get little feathers on the jacket. So that says, it says explicitly in halacha, you can remove those little feathers because they're not really embedded. They're just on the surface. So if it's only on the surface, not embedded, it's permitted. So if I have a situation where some crumbs fell on my carpet and they're not embedded yet, they're just on the surface, there's no problem of taking them off. I can take them off. So that's the first layer of heter, is that if it's not embedded yet, it's just on top, it's permitted to take it off. A rug, a carpet, etc.
Can you sweep them off?
Sweep them off with a broom, yes. Gently. As long as you're not going in. Now, the second layer which we address over here, that you can take them off lightly because you're not going to be doing anything active, pulling out between the fibers. Right? So you can... Even if they're by the jacket, if a little bit gets on, I don't care about it, so then I'm allowed to take it off. That's not considered I'm doing anything. So a little bit of dust gets on it, even if it gets embedded in, if I don't mind, I'm allowed to take it off. Again, that's counterintuitive, right, somewhat. If I don't mind, I'm allowed to take it off. So if I basically cleaned, I vacuumed before Shabbos, so the carpet right now is fairly clean, and maybe a little got embedded in to the point, I really don't mind there's a little bit in there. It's not going to bother me so much as a little bit there. It would be much more to bother me. So if I forgot to vacuum, before, I didn't have a chance to vacuum before Shabbos, there's a lot of dirt in there and it bothers me, then I can't take it out. There's just a few crumbs that get embedded in, but I still really don't mind. So then I'd be allowed to take them out. Even though they're embedded, I'm allowed to take them out because I don't mind that they're there. Again, that's somewhat subjective. That'd be somewhat subjective to you'd be allowed to take that out. The more which is there, the more I can't take it out. Okay, that's talking about dry food. So you have a situation, you have dry food, so now, what are you allowed to use? So, Ramesh Zatzal held carpet sweepers were problematic. He held they were not mutter to do. That's not, you can use a broom, but you can't use these non-electric carpet sweepers. He held that they were a problem. Yes?
So you said specifically that the more that's there, the more it bothers you.
Again, that's subjective. You might have a person with one little crumb drives them crazy, no, then they can't take it away.
Because I would feel like it's lehefech, because if you just cleaned up, then the fact that they just I'm assuming my kids, like, dump something into the carpet is much more bothersome because I just vacuumed than if the carpet's anyways a mess. I didn't have a chance to vacuum before Shabbos, and then it's another cracker smushed in. Okay, so it's another cracker.
Yeah, but you couldn't go clean... If you want to clean just that cracker, but you want to clean the carpet, you couldn't. That really bothers you. You have a dirty carpet. It's either way, the dirty carpet bothers you. So you couldn't do either of them. That's okay. Correct. Right. Okay. So the point, the less, but my point is, the less noticeable it is, the more permitted it is. The less notable it is, the more permitted that it's going to be. Now, let's say you have, the halacha continues and talks about, let's say a person got on his jacket, or in this case, on the carpet, some cholent fell. Right? So a person got some cholent on his jacket. Right? So what are you allowed to do? So long, we're going to differentiate between when the item is wet and when it's dry. But let's right now assume the item is still wet. So taking off a stain on a garment. So this is an act of cleaning it. So is that permitted? And then we'll transfer that concept again. No, and we're digressing again. We'll transfer that concept back to your carpet.
I have two more questions about dry problems.
Yeah.
First, if one person does care, one person doesn't. Say my husband really cares about being clean, and I don't. Yeah. Can I ask? Can one person clean the other person's clothing? If it's something that normal.
It's a good question. And the Mishnah Berurah and the Beir Halacha raises this question: where what do you do when the owner of the garment cares, and the person who's cleaning doesn't, or vice versa? He feels it goes with the owner of the garment. Now, in the situation of the home between you and your husband, who owns things, I'm not getting involved in shalom bayis issues. Now you have to work out yourself. An interesting question came up. Let's say a parent vis-a-vis a child. The kid couldn't care less what his clothes look like, but the parent does care. So that's not the case of the Beir Halacha, because over there, it's just the child doesn't understand the concepts. The parent is aware of the value of something. So the parent, anyway, it could be the parent is the owner of the garment, not the child. But over there, it would be an issue, cleaning children's clothing, because it bothers you.
So it's the owner, not the wearer.
Normally, it's the owner, not the wearer. Right.
And then the other question was,
yeah.
So there's something paradoxical about this. You can only clean if you don't care, because if you don't care, why would you clean? So I'm thinking with the carpet, the only context that would matter is you say, well, I would only care if there's a lot of dirt. I can't clean once there's a lot of dirt, so I'll clean every 5 minutes just in case. You know, or I'll clean... What?
Like, it encourages you to be a little more OCD.
But that's really intelligent. Is that okay if you're cleaning so that it won't get to the level where you care? Because that's the only context I think where someone actually would do it, would be if you're trying to prevent it from getting to be bad. Right?
You know, it's an interesting question. I've never thought about it. Are you allowed to be OCD or not, the Chaskil or not? to borrow Mrs. Koretsky's phrase over there. No, I think it's a good point. I can hear that would be, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that this person should spend the whole shop is doing that. Yeah.
It just made me think that what if, like, there's half a cracker or part of a cracker on my carpet, and I don't really care that bad half a cracker is there as it is, but it would bother me if someone would step on it, like, and break it into a thousand teeny tiny little pieces and smush it into the carpet.
Right, so that would be a scenario that would be permitted right now, because right now it's not bothering you.
But it's bothering me that there's a possibility that someone would step on it. Is that considered bothering?
That's not a problem with the appearance of the what bothers you is the appearance of the item. That's what we're talking about. Right. Not, I have other reasons why it bothers me. It, you know, that's what we're talking about. Again, if it's totally on the surface, if it's not embedded, it's mutter. If it's still on the top, it hasn't went anywhere yet. A half a cracker is not.
Step on it again.
Okay. You know, before you know, until it gets embedded, you're okay for sure. Okay.
So I didn't think you're allowed to remove the cracker or no?
In that scenario, you're allowed to remove the cracker. Yeah. Just one second. What was I saying?
About the wet cholent on the jacket.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So if a person wants to remove it in a way where it's going to totally come off, right? Halavai, right? You're able to get everything off. The kid's clothing now looks nice and clean again. So that's awesome. Because you've cleaned it. If you remove it in such a way that a little stain remains, so then it's mutter, because you didn't really clean it. Even though you took off all of that, the beans and the barley, there's just a little of cholin juice left, and you know there's a stain left. That, but you didn't really clean it. At the end of the day, the garment has not been changed. Now I do want to point out that this is a specific issue on this stain right here. A person comes and says, you know, my garment has 15 stains. 15, 16. So, right? So I'm allowed to take one away because, you know, I still have 15 anyway. No. The stain that you removed, you removed. But over here, the point is even the stain you didn't remove. So you didn't do anything. So that's permitted. So, let's say even if it peels off totally, and go back to our noticeable. It's not noticeable. It wasn't noticeable to start with. It wasn't a very large stain. It wasn't very significant. I'd say, I'm OCD, right? And I notice it, but nobody else can see it. You know, we all... I have a daughter who's almost a teenage daughter. You know, there's stains which nobody else in the world will notice but her, and of course it bothers her, right? I don't think that's a problem. I'm not sure they have a look.
It's okay to tell somebody that it's schmutzig and they can remove it?
No, if you notice it, then it's a problem.
If I noticed, I was sitting on a table and I saw somebody had some chocolate here.
If it's visible,
am I allowed to tell him that he's got dirty and he can clean it?
No.
No.
So the point of it's a very small point and it's not really noticeable. So then you could, you know, it's a little dot. So then you can take off.
If it's a big dot?
No. and you can't use, while you're doing this, you can't use a brush to do this. You know, even if in a case where it's permitted, but you cannot do it in the normal way you do it during the week, they're using a brush or something to remove it. Yeah.
How about if you're a guest at someone's house and you don't really care if there's anything on the floor, you just want to be helpful to clean up, can you?
Right, but again, it depends on the owner, not on you.
So you have to ask?
Of course.
If you can someone bother them, you can't take it off.
Right. So do you have to ask them, or can you?
I guess most people usually assume that these things about a piece of cholent on the floor and the carpet is going to bother them. So you can take off the actual piece of cholent. Now, I do want to point out if it dries, now this piece of cholent fell on the ground and now it's dried out. Right? So there's another problem in halacha that even removing and leaving a stain, because if as you take it apart, it breaks apart, you might be doing the halacha of tochen of grinding something into small pieces. And that applies to the same problem that applies to a kid gets muddy. So when the mud is dirt, is moist, so you have a catch 22 when a kid gets muddy. If you catch it when it's moist, so you can take it off and leave a small layer. When it dried off already, there's a malacha, there's a problem on the rice level of cracking that dirt into small pieces. You're doing talking, you're grinding something. Can you add water? You can't add water because that's called the malacha of leisha, of combining a liquid and a solid together. So you can't go add water and make it moist again. So that situation, that's one example which we have tonight, which I don't have, I'm not going to give you a solution for. Catch it when it's still wet. That's the solution over there. So the same thing over here, when it comes to the floor, or it comes to a person's garment, catch it when it's still wet. Because once it dries, now if it's something which is ground already, if your mazel was mashed potatoes, no problem, because you can't re-grind it. But usually that's not the situation. Yeah.
What's the best way to remove the liquid chunk? Should you like flick it off? Can you use a napkin? Should you just use your fingers?
You can use a napkin. You can use a napkin as long again you're leaving it. You're not
right. You're just picking up the
that upper. Yes, yeah, so that's you can do it straight. There's a case in a locker where something which is not embedded, and they say you should use it from flicking from behind. Because that's in the case, it's not really embedded. That's a different issue. It's a different issue. That's a different issue. Okay. So we addressed, we went off to the side and talked about clothing. That really addresses your carpet also. You notice we haven't gotten to the kitchen yet. Yeah.
Sorry, with going back to the napkin question, can you rub it off?
You can rub it off, and again, if it's going to take away all of the, take away.
There'll still be a stain underneath.
As long as there's stain underneath, you're okay. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know why.
Unless you're squeezing. In other words, if it's going to squeeze out liquid from the garment, then you have a different problem.
I don't know why. I always thought that there's something with smricha, maybe, about rubbing up something liquid. There's nothing with that. If you have something liquid on clothing, it's smricha. Maybe we can use that, but that could be. But if you have something liquid on your clothing, you're not allowed to rub it.
Something liquid.
Did I make that up?
If you're going to squeeze it, you have a problem squeezing out the liquid.
Isn't there something if you have a liquid stain?
We have to be careful not to squeeze it out, right?
Right, so if you have some, if you can rub it, though?
if it's not going to be, if it's something which is, I mean, again, if you're rubbing it too hard enough that you're going to squeezing out, you can't rub it. Correct.
So you could just, like, very, very lightly rub
it. You could take it off. It's whatever needs to take it off. As long as you're only doing the surface. As long as you're not going beyond the surface, you're okay. Okay. So now, some liquid spilled on the table, liquid spilled on the floor. We had the case where we poured liquid on the floor. And what are you allowed to do? So going back to the other area of the malacha of cleaning, of laundering. So the process of laundering was done with water. So the Gemara says actually there's three steps to the process of laundering. I'm telling you ladies, of course, right? All right. The first step in halacha is adding the water. Adding the water in halacha is considered cleaning it already. As soon as you add the water to the item, you've loosened up the dirt, you've done something, that's already on a Torah level, that's considered you've done a malacha of cleaning. That's the first step. Shriyus is al kibusa. Just soaking it is considered cleaning. The second stage is rubbing it together. And the third stage is wringing it out. When you wring it out, you pull the water out. As the water comes out, it pulls out dirt. So any one of those stages is considered prohibited on the Torah level of cleaning. Now, since that's so Chazal came along and said, we don't want you soaking garments in water, even if, let's say, the water is dirty. So you can't say, well, it's cleaning it because it's soaking in water. It's dirty water. But you still might do the wringing process. You say, okay, then now I soak my item in this lemonade, which, you know, spilled over here, right? So soaking lemonade is not cleaning it, right? But squeezing out lemonade is cleaning it. You're taking out the lemonade, right? So if you're going to put something in there, which normally you don't like the fact that it stays wet, you want it to be dry. You can't put it on there because you might come to wring it out. If it's there, you might come to squeeze it. There's a concern you might come to squeeze it. So therefore, if you want to soak up your liquid, you can only use something that you don't mind the fact that it's wet. So if something spilled, like grab my apron until you get a towel, who knows what's going to happen. You grab your apron and use your apron. An apron you can't use. Now, you want to go get a shmata, which you don't care whether it's wet or not. Zuntahate, you can use a shmata. Even a towel, you could argue a towel. That you can put a towel on there and soak it up. So if I want to soak up my wet, this spill that I have over here, I want to soak it up with a towel. That's not that's okay. Now, however, take it a step further. That addresses the concern you might squeeze it. But what about the soaking itself? What is the soaking itself an act of cleaning it? So we have a few potential scenarios. There's a decision of the Mishnah Berurah, and he says, let's say I have a clean garment. And someone says clean. So what do you mean soaking is cleaning? It's clean already. So this is an argument at the level of the Rishonim, whether this is considered cleaning or not. And the Mishnah Berurah's final decision is that it's a problem. He says, even if you have a clean garment, soaking in water is a problem. Because that's considered cleaning. So I have this water, if I have lemonade spilled on my table is one thing. I have water, oranges spilled on the table. That's one thing, right? But I have water spilled on the table. So I put a shmata on it. Maybe I'm cleaning. Maybe at that point in time, I'm considered cleaning the shmata when I put it in.
Do you have hot water outside?
There isn't. Sorry. So Ramosha says, therefore, because of this issue, he says that using disposable napkins, etc., is your best option. Now, it's a small spill that's realistic. You know, a large spill that's not such an easy solution to do. So if you use a towel or something which is not, you're not going to come to the nature, you don't mind the fact that it's wet, you know, it's not going to come to squeeze it out. and you use one which is clean, and your goal isn't to squeeze it out, your goal isn't to do that, there's what to say that is permitted. It seems to be a contradiction of Mishnah Berurah. So if you don't have any other option, you could use that. If you don't have any other option, you could use that. There is there is a suggestion which I'm not going to go there. Yeah, yes.
Isn't it true that if you use a towel and you're soaking up something like coffee, that if the towel is light, they should die in the
yes.
towel?
Yes. Now, two more issues we're going to get to. Is okay. So we said there's now besides Chazal saying that there you might come to squeeze it out. They said you can't move it because you might come to squeeze it out once it's wet. So to pick it up at that point in time, the correct way to pick it up is using a utensil to pick it up. You can use a knife. You can use a not you don't pick it up directly with your hands. So now that it's soaked, you picked it up with a knife with a. You want to get really fancy, you get a spatula, and you pick it up that way and take it to where the bathtub and throw in the bathtub, and then you're okay. Have you had your hand for a while?
I mean, no, just no. Is that only when it's soaked, or is it if it's damp?
Only if it's soaked.
Like dripping.
The definition of soaked is it's wet enough that if I put my hand there, it'll get wet to the level that it makes something else wet when I touch it. That's the definition of wet. Yeah. Right, so using dirty water is not a problem in that respect. So, for example, let's say there's a small amount. Let's say there's a small amount of liquid spilled. To use a towel, which I don't mind to squeeze out, then I'd be allowed to take the towel and wipe it up, and that's not a problem. I'm not squeezing by doing that. But it's a large amount of liquid, which is going to get to the point where it's wet, halachically wet. So then you should not be picking up directly. Okay, we're going to hold it here. And let me just take questions on that. So this is round one. So if everybody, I sent the email list around. I hope it made it some way around. It's a distribution. So if everybody get all the email. If we can, I mean, I'm happy to do another shiur. According to the schedule, the next shiur, the schedule is a month from now. I'm not sure what the date is.
Governing for women.
Right. So it's January 30th. If we can schedule one in the middle, or we could replace that one with this one. I'm open to either way to do that. I'm sorry?
Schedule one in the middle.
So this is what? This is now December 19th. Monday, so January 2nd. January 9th would work for me. So January 9th would work for the whoever to make. So I will be now, we'll send out an email just confirming that January 9th. So if we get everybody's email, that'd be the best way to communicate with everybody. And whoever is taking, I'm not sure we made enough copies of the Sherm, but you can please take a copy home. Any questions? Yes?
So this soaking wet towel, I mean, halakhically soaked towel. I can't
hang it
up somewhere to dry. It has to just be hung down somewhere, like in the bathtub, in a basket.
That's a separate issue. There's a separate issue when people see things hanging to dry. People will think that maybe you washed it. Mm-hmm. They don't know why it's hanging there to dry. So yes, there'll be a problem with hanging it. Yes.
You know, the topic from table to seat,
I didn't make it to the sink yet.
No, can we just have like a one liner about dishes, like, and then go to the sink with them, the dirty dishes.
And you wash them.
Now wash.
Okay, you
and
wash
you
them.
To, and you scoop them up. You have to put them in the oven. I know the silverware comes in.
Yes, I mean, really, I would like to give, you know, there's a lot to talk about that. So but the one-liner is that there are many scenarios where you're allowed to wash them, and there are scenarios where you're allowed to put them in the dishwasher, there are scenarios where you're allowed to put them in the oven. And stay tuned for part two. Okay, I'm sorry. I, as I was preparing, I realized there's so much to talk about. You're never going to make it to the sink. At least you made it from the table. Okay.